It's Saturday, the 16th of January, 2016. Happy birthday to General Grievous Vasquez. To the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Warren R45. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like Warren R45, just leave a review on iTunes. Thank you to everybody who has done that. It is greatly, greatly helpful in getting the show more popular and getting to a larger audience. So thank you to everyone who has done that. And if you've got a spare 2 minutes, I do encourage you to do that, because it's great for me to hear the feedback, and it's great to promote the show as well. We are going to talk about all the action from Friday in the NBA. We're going to preview Saturday's action. I don't want to waste any more of your time.
Let's get to it.
The monstrous line of the night, I'm sure you can tell by looking at this episode's title. It's Hassan Whiteside of the Miami Heat. Whiteside played 38 minutes for the Heat in his first game back starting after that knee problem. 19 points, 17 rebounds, 2 assists, which is probably the most remarkable stat for Whiteside out of everything, to be honest. 1 steal, 11 blocks, so a triple-double for Whiteside, and he went 8 of 13 from the field and 3 of 5 from the free throw line. Got a stat come from my brother, Jordan Lloyd, who you've heard on the podcast before, and he mentioned that in the last 2 seasons, there's been 3 triple-doubles with blocks. And they've all been from Hassan Whiteside. So he's the only guy to do it. What's he played? 2 half seasons? It's crazy. Doesn't change the fact that he's not a good defender. Doesn't change the fact that he's almost definitely not going to be back on the Heat next season. He's great for fantasy purposes. Just putting up tremendous, tremendous numbers. He is what we thought Rudy Gobert could be this year, at a much higher level than what Gobert's producing. The block numbers, the rebound numbers, they just come in such bulk, and he's able to score a lot more than Gobert as well. We knew he had the talent. We were a bit worried about the mental side of things, and that is still a problem, and the minutes aren't great for him, but he's still producing, even in these sort of limited minutes. He's only getting 29 minutes a game, but he's still at 12 and 11 with 4 blocks and half a steal on 60% shooting, and that's tremendous. Obviously, the free throws are a concern. You know you're not getting assists and steals out of him. Well, you get some steals. You know you're not getting assists. I mentioned that the 2 assists from him in this game was probably the most impressive part of his stat line. He's had 12 assists on the season. Had 2 of them in this game. That's big for him. Now, it makes zero difference in the scope of fantasy leagues if he gives you 2 assists. But, hey, I wanted to mention it because he's just so, so bad at that category. But Whiteside has been a real steal. You were able to get him in probably the 30s or 40s. I think I've got him in one league. Probably should have grabbed him in another one where I grabbed Gobert, but that's obviously great in hindsight. We were just a bit worried that for a guy who did it for about 40 games, maybe he wasn't going to be able to reproduce it. Maybe he'd go off the rails like he did last year and like he still could do this season. But he's been a great asset for fantasy teams so far. The waiver wire line of the night, my boy, Kelly Olynyk of the Boston Celtics, back to the bench as part of Brad Stevens' infuriating front court rotations, but he played 27 minutes, 21 points, including 4 triples, 9 rebounds, 1 assist, 3 steals, 1 block. You know what I'm going to say about Olynyk? He is their best front court player. To me, he's not their most reliable because Stevens jerks things around. It's real hard to, in a 10-team league, it's very hard to own him. In a 12-team league, the upside is tremendous. Like, it's really, really that good. But we don't know what they're going to do with him. Now, he's ranked on the season 123rd, which is okay for a 12-team league. But that's only in 20 minutes. His per 36 numbers on the season are 17 and 8, 2 triples, 3 assists, 1.5 steals, over 1 block. Like, they're really good numbers. Like, they're superb numbers. Yeah, for him to approach 30 minutes, it feels like it's going to be a modern miracle for him to get anywhere near that. What do you do with Olynyk? I'm going to doubt that he's going to be back in the starting lineup the next game, but he could still play 25 minutes off the bench. If you own him in a 12-team league, you hold. If you've got some crap on your bench, maybe you add. But I just get the feeling that he's never going to... Well, not never. I don't think... Maybe this season, he's never going to achieve his top 50 upside because of the way that Stevens is running the rotation. Stevens has phased David Lee out of the rotation, and he's given the minutes to Jonas Jerebko. Now, I like Jerebko a lot, but I would rather Olynyk play 28 minutes than Jerebko play 19 or 20 minutes. And they did it okay in this one. 27 for Olynyk, 20 for Jerebko, but that reduced Amir Johnson down to 19 minutes, who'd been playing really well. So there's always going to be some sort of bullshit sort of trade-off that Stevens is going to throw out there, and that's going to limit Olynyk, it's going to limit Salinger, it's going to limit Johnson. When in essence, they all should be getting 27-plus minutes, and Jerebko can fill in the gaps behind those guys, but that's just not the way that Brad Stevens rolls, and we're all aware of that. He would need a couple of guys to clear out, or Olynyk would need to go to a different team for him to really, you know, harness all of his fantasy potential. The young gun of the night, we're sticking with the same team, the Boston Celtics, because Marcus Smart had his first triple-double in the NBA. There was a lot of triple-doubles happening in the NBA. Smart had the very low-end triple-double, 10 points, 11 rebounds, 11 assists. But what really boosted his lineup, apart from the triple-double, obviously, is he had a three, but he had two steals and two blocks. Now, he's going to continually hurt your percentages, well, at least for the first few years of his career, 4 of 12 from the field, 1 of 2 from the free throw line. But I've said this almost every time that I've spoken about now Marcus Smart, is that he's a great rebounder as a point guard. Over his last 8 games, he's averaging 5.5 boards, you know, 3.6 assists. He has got 5 rebound, 5 assist upside. His fantasy value is going to come from his steals as well. He's at 1.8 over those last 2 weeks. He'll be a guy that can be a 1.5 threes guy and a 1.5 to 2 steals guy. Now, his threes have been well down this year. He's only at 0.8 per game on the season. You'd think that will come up a little bit, but he's shooting just a terrible percentage. He's at, over the last month, he's shooting, over the last 2 months, 14% from three. It's really bad. He's shooting over the last two months, 26% from the field. That's horrible. You can only own him in a punt field goal percentage situation. But if he gets that back up to 38 or 40, his scoring goes up, his overall value goes through the roof. I really like Marcus Smart. He has a lot of fantasy ability once he gets those percentages under wraps. I'm not sure he'll ever become a great free throw shooter. He'll never be a great three-point shooter, but he's going to be better than 16% or 14%, and he'll be a better shooter than 26. We talk about Rubio being a bad field goal shooter. Marcus Smart at 26% is disgusting. It'll have to come up, and I imagine a big second half coming from Smart. You know, once we hit February, I think we're going to see a strong top 70 finish from him. That's my relatively bold prediction. It's not a prediction, it's a hope. I think he can do that. I own him in a dynasty league, a 12-team dynasty league, and I'm hoping that starts to come true. I think I might own him in one other spot. But if you're not punting field goal percentage at the moment, you can't hold on to Marcus Smart. Unfortunately, the dud of the night. A couple of my boys in there with Kelly Olynyk with the waiver wire line of the night, the young gun of the night with Smart, both guys I'm really high on. Unfortunately, the dud of the night is also one of my boys. Nikola Mirotić of the Chicago Bulls. 15 minutes for Mirotić. 2 points, 2 rebounds, and 1 assist. Now, I don't put it all on Mirotić. Well, I sort of do because he was bad. But what's Fred Hoiberg doing? I've said it a few times that he has no confidence in Mirotić and therefore doesn't give confidence to Mirotić. I had that joke that, you know, if Mirotić misses his first 2 or 3 shots, he's going to get benched. And that sort of didn't happen over the last 2 weeks. But instead, what happened here, he had one bad game and he was benched and banished. Forget about the string of 2 to 3 weeks of him being, you know, close to their best front court player. Pau Gasol was probably better, but on most nights, it was Mirotić or Gasol, one of those two guys, and Mirotić was better than Pau on a number of nights. They benched him, they played him 14 minutes, and the Bulls scored 77 points. They need Mirotić to make their offense run, to make it work. You can't put guys like Tony Snell out there, who is just putrid on offense. He's got some defensive abilities, but he is disgusting as an offensive player. Taj Gibson offers no offense. Joakim Noah, he's got negative offense. You can't be running these guys out there. You need some offense. And Mirotić at 3 is not a great situation. It was working out well for us fantasy owners, but it's not great for him, and he's not. It's not his right spot. But they scored 77 points, the Bulls. He needs to play more than 15 minutes. Tony Snell doesn't need 20. Etuan Moore doesn't need 22 minutes. Taj Gibson, honestly, doesn't need 30 minutes. And this was a game where Joakim Noah played just 6 minutes with his shoulder problem. Really, really frustrating to me. Not dropping Mirotić by any stretch. I'm holding on to him and seeing what happens, especially with Noah probably out again now with his shoulder, seeing what sort of lineups they run with and whether they can get Mirotić back to a 25 to 27 minute role. But they scored 77 points. You need Mirotić in your lineup. You need him playing a bigger role. There are going to be plenty of people that disagree with me because there's a lot of people who don't like Mirotić. And when the news was tweeted out, I think by, KC Johnson, that Mirotić was moving to the bench, all the first few comments after that tweet were good. Good. Mirotić to the bench, Snell starting. Good. About time. I don't know if these guys watch basketball or not, but Tony Snell's not good. Yes, Mirotić can be frustrating, but he really is needed for this team to do what they need to do. And I understand if there was someone good that could come off and replace him. But I'm not convinced that these guys who are doing it, like Snell and like Gibson, are better than Mirotić. And if they are better, they're certainly not massively better than him. Maybe it sounds like I'm going on a bit of a Mirotić rant, but I just don't. I'm a Bulls fan, so it impacts me in two ways. I don't understand the move. I don't get giving Tony Snell minutes. Get some offense out there. Two guys scored in double figures for the Bulls. Rose and Pau Gasol. One bad game versus three weeks of solid contributions and he moved to the bench. It's a weird one to me. But yeah, there's going to be plenty of people who disagree with me and thinks that he's shit house. But yeah, we disagree. The DFS perfect lineup. Let's bring it up. At point guard, Marcus Smart, 44.7. Damian Lillard, 53.6. I've already talked about Smart. Lillard was great, obviously, in his game as well. He's on fire at the moment, Damian Lillard. He was taking on the Nets, which was a great option for him. I talked about him yesterday. He was a really solid option for his price. At shooting guard, Kyle Korver had been invisible. He put up 28.3 points in an overtime game. And a couple of people tweeted at me this morning about Korver. I said, yeah, look, he's definitely worth a play in a tournament. I didn't necessarily think he'd get this back on track, but 28.3 points at less than 4,000 salary is obviously pretty impressive. Let's hope that means that he's going on an extended run. We'll see. And Giannis at 52.2 going up against the Hawks. He's been on a pretty hot streak at the moment. The small forwards, Jay Crowder, 39.7, and Chris Middleton, 39.3. Both of these guys have been crushing their value recently too. So they weren't that difficult to plug into a lineup. Ryan Anderson, on the other hand, 41.6. Yes, he has that ability, but with Davis back, normally he doesn't get such a big role, but he was great today. And Paul Millsap at 54, he was always on track for a big one against the Bucks. Hassan Whiteside was taking on the Nuggets, so 62.4. You was always a big chance of a big game for him. Didn't necessarily think he was going to go for 62.4, but with most of these ones, maybe not Smart, you know, probably not Anderson, you could have worked through and fitted these guys into a lineup. If you had have had this lineup, 415.8, fantastic. But it's not like some of those lineups that you see out there where you go, how could you have picked this guy? How could you possibly pick this guy? I can look at this and go, yeah, this all makes sense. I didn't create this lineup, but I could have. And it falls into a, congratulations if someone did have that, it falls into a situation of it being a lineup where you can make sense of it all. Where some of them, sometimes, I think yesterday's one was like that, where it was like, how could I possibly pick this guy? But with the games on Friday, the logic behind it is fairly sound, I think. All right, let's get into these games now, into these box scores, and start looking at them in a little bit more detail. But before we do that, let's have a quick break for a word from our sponsors. All right, we're back. Let's talk Wizards and Pacers, which was the first game. A couple of blowouts early on, so that skewed some of the box scores. The first one was a blowout. The Wizards got the victory on the road over the Pacers. John Wall was great, 28-7-8 with a 3 and a steal. I was talking about John Wall today with my mate Mika Honkasalo, who you might have seen on Twitter, or we might follow on Twitter. He's at mhonkasalo on Twitter. I just recorded a podcast with him today, which will be going up in the next 24 hours, and we talked about our all-star teams. So once that comes out, I'll tweet it out or go and follow Mika, and you can hear his stuff and read his stuff. He's a writer. He writes for Nylon Calculus and for Vantage Sports as well, heavily into analytics stuff. We talked about all-stars, and we had a bit of a chat about John Wall. But it's really impressive what Wall's doing this year after a really slow start, especially the addition of the three-point shot. Now, he's not the greatest three-point shooter, but the fact that he's taking them and making them really helps the rest of the team, and it helps his game as well because it opens things up. People don't have to sag off him and think, no way, he's taking a deep shot, because he is now, and he's actually starting to make some of them. And Mika had some ridiculous stat that on pull-up threes, he's shooting, or pull-up jumpers in general, like 64% as opposed to like 25 on spot-ups or something like that, something ridiculous. So when he's got the ball in his hands and he pulls up and shoots, he's using his momentum and he's using the way he plays really effectively. So that was a quite interesting stat that Mika brought up today. Brad Beal played just 22 minutes, 22-5 with 4 threes for Beal. He had an assist as well. 22 minutes, he's going to be on this minutes limit for, you'd have to think, quite some time. And well, Beal said it might last his whole career, which is obviously worrying for a guy this age. Now, I tweeted out an excerpt from an article that I saw on Ball Don't Lie today. Read it. You might have seen it. I'll read it now. It says, Beal will be on a tight minutes restriction and likely come off the bench when he returns, as he's done in previous years. And then it says, I wouldn't doubt it, Beal said, especially if I'm on a minutes restriction. You know how coach Randy Whitman gets. He'll forget how many minutes I'm out there and leave me out there. But we've been rolling with what we have now, and I'm not mad at that at all. Whatever's going to take for us to win. Randy Whitman, it's your job. It's your job to know how many minutes your players are playing and not overplay guys who have got stress reactions in their leg. This is how you get to this problem. Yeah, Whitman could have ruined Beal's career. We don't know what Beal's career is going to be now. He's had this reaction 3 years in a row because Whitman is a dickhead who can't work out, don't play the guy 40 minutes a night when he's got a stress reaction in his leg. I would hope that both Beal, or all of Beal, Whitman, and the coaching staff, and the training staff at the Wizards, they employ someone to sit next to Randy and go, tap him on the shoulder. Mate, you might want to get him out. Because otherwise, Beal's career's done. This could cost him money. This could cost him a max contract. For fantasy, he's still going to be productive, but he's not going to approach the heights that some people thought he could approach, and that sort of top 50, top 40 player, if he's going to be limited to 24, 25 minutes a night. And they could conceivably do that for the next month, 2 months. Because of all this bullshit that Whitman's done over the last 2 or 3 seasons. I know that JJ Kelly's been massive on this on Twitter. Every time that Beal's played big minutes, it's just one more game closer to him missing time with a stress reaction. And it's happened every time that JJ said it. If JJ can work it out, and JJ's a pretty smart guy, so I'm not saying if he can work it out, but surely the people who are actually on the team can work it out, and we've got degrees in being doctors and shit like that. Work it out, Wizards. Work it out. Anyway, that's a pretty long rant. Garrett Temple played 28 minutes, 5-6-5 with a 3 and a block. His minutes will continue to come down as Beal gradually increases, and the fact that he's not good will also impact that as well. And Otto Porter was out of this one. So Kelly Oubre started, and he played just 18 minutes, 7-4 with a couple of steals and a 3. It doesn't appear like Porter's going to be a long-term situation, so there's no need to rush out and grab Oubre. Marcin Gortat should also be back pretty soon, so that's going to limit any impact that Drew Gooden has. He went 8-4 in his 17 minutes, and Nene went 8-8 with a steal and a block in his 21 minutes. I don't imagine that either of those guys are going to be standard league players, but I'll tell you who is, or maybe he's not a standard league guy, but is really interesting, is Ramon Sessions. 23 minutes, 10 points, 3 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, just continually getting it done. He's playing next to John Wall some, and that's interesting in itself. A really cheap source of assists. You can just go and add him. And he's giving you over 4 assists a game over the last 2 weeks. It's not easy to find. Plus, he's a 48% shooter this year. That's probably a little bit misleading considering he was a 37% guy last year, 43 the year before, 41 the year before, 43 the year before. He's really taking it up, multiple notches here. He's never going to be a big three-point guy, But for those sort of assists and some decent steals at really efficient rates, Ramon Sessions can be owned in 12-team leagues, assuming it fits what your team needs. And that's a key point to so many of these things that I talk about. And people will often tweet at me, do I grab Sessions and drop Mahinmi? I'll go, okay, maybe. But what do you want? Like, what do you want your team to do? Because you're just completely changing everything. You're losing massive rebounds, massive blocks, all this field goal percentage, and you're gaining assists and steals. And that's how it all comes down to. It's not about, in a vacuum, who's better? It doesn't matter in a vacuum. You're not playing in a vacuum. You're playing with your team that's constructed the way it is. So it depends on what you need. And I might make a move of a trade, which I rarely do, or an add or a drop that might seem stupid on the surface, is because it's what I need. It's what I need my team to do. No point holding someone who helps you in a category you're losing anyway, or adds an extra 5 assists a game onto a category that you're routinely winning by 100 assists each week. It's pointless. You need to make the move that makes the most sense. Anyway, on to the Pacers. They were bad. Paul George, 6 of 19 shooting. That translates to 32%. He had 21 points. That's because he got to the line 8 times and hit all 8 of those. 5 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals, a block, and a 3. So a nice overall line, but that field goal percentage was not ideal. And George Hill had a pretty decent night too. 19 and 8 with 2 threes and a steal. Monte Ellis's big run of assists dropped off. Still had 3, 17, 3, and 3 with a steal and a block. And CJ Miles re-entered the starting lineup and was bad. He was much better off the bench over the last week or so. 4 points with a steal and a block on only 1 of 3 shooting. Didn't take many shots, which is a weird one for me, with Miles. Still, if that's what you need and he's a guy who's over 2 threes a game all season, then hold on. Lavoie Allen got hot off the bench, 15 points in 20 minutes, but he can be left alone. And Yan Mahinmi played just 21 in this one for 7 and 4. You know that I still like me some Yan Mahinmi. This game was that much of a blowout there that we saw Solomon Hill play for 8 minutes. We saw Joseph Young get in and play for 3 minutes as well. The game was over very, very early in proceedings. The Minnesota Timberwolves and the Oklahoma City Thunder is up next. This game was a blowout as well. 20-point margin in the end. It was over in about the first 4 minutes. Let's be honest, it was over before the game started, but it was over in about the first 5 minutes. Andrew Wiggins had a very typical Wiggo sort of line. 25 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. He did hit all 5 of his free throws. So overall, a positive result from him, but still just needs to do more in those other areas. I've been on a few rants already today. But when you're getting blown out as the Timberwolves, why is Gorgui Dieng playing 16 minutes? I'm still never going to understand some of the moves that Sam Mitchell makes. They're baffling. They're confusing. Dieng is really struggling at the moment. Some of it is on him. And look, maybe he's not quite as good of a player as I thought he was at the start of the year or what we'd seen the first 2 seasons. But he's definitely being put in a worse position and in a position where he can't succeed. And that's troubling. I think that Dieng can be dropped in 10-team leagues. In a 12-team league, again, it depends on who you're looking to add, but he's not must-hold anymore. Zach LaVine had a decent night, 13 and 6 in 24 minutes, but I'm not rushing to grab him. And Nikola Pekovic had 10 points in his 18 minutes, but nah, not rushing to add him either. Another big night from Shabazz Muhammad. 34 minutes for him, 15 points and 4 rebounds. But he's still just a deeper league guy, a 14, probably 16 team league guy who really helps in scoring and not a lot else. Rick Rubio played just 24 minutes, 6 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. Not his greatest night. And of course, why wouldn't you play Andre Miller 6 minutes and not have Tyus Jones active at all? Never going to understand that one either. Karl-Anthony Towns played 30 minutes. He didn't have a good night. He was just 4 of 13 from the field. He did grab 8 offensive rebounds in his 12. No steals and no blocks. Just a bit of a down night from him. And it carries on a bit of a down couple of weeks for him. Hit an owner with a buy low. You know, go pretty low because we know that he's got top 20 upside, but he's definitely in a trough at the moment. On the Thunder, it was a blowout. So again, minutes were spread. But thankfully, they were spread to my boy Campaign. 24 minutes for Payne, 14, 2 and 5, 4 steals, 1 block, 1 3-pointer, 6 of 11 shooting. I'm going to gush about him, and I probably gush about him too much that I'm trying to acquire him in the Red Rock Dynasty League from Greg, who owns him, and I don't reckon I'm going to have much luck because everyone knows how much I love this guy. I should have actually bid on him higher in the draft. In that league, it was 400 players deep. We had a $400 auction budget. Payne went for $11, which is relatively expensive for a rookie who wasn't going to play, but that's how much upside he's got. Over the last month, in per 36 fantasy value, he's the 7th-ranked player. His numbers at the moment are enough to make you consider him even in a 14-team league. I probably wouldn't in a 12-team league because his upside to get big run is just not there. But over the last month, he's the 115th-ranked player, so that makes you consider him in a 12-team league. I still probably wouldn't do it because most of that value is coming from that little bump in percentages. But if Westbrook goes down, hopefully he doesn't, this could be a legit top 50 fantasy player even this season. He'd obviously have a tough time adjusting to starting units and stuff like that. But geez, he is going to be real good. And me and Mark Roberts, when we talked about at the start of the season, Payne, we were so massively high on him, and he went to the worst possible situation he could have gone to in the lottery, and that's the Thunder, obviously. Russell Westbrook had a triple double. 12, 11, and 10 with 2 steals in his 27 minutes, and it's a blowout. 27 minutes, that's what's going to happen. 30 minutes for Durant, he went 21, 6, and 7 with a steal and a 3, and Serge Ibaka had 3 blocks with 13, 5, and 4. So decent nights for those guys in limited role. Steven Adams had 12 and 4 with a steal and a block, and he is valuable in some sort of situations. And Enes Kanter played 25 minutes and had 7 and 5, and This was a situation of not a good Enes Kanter night. Whereas the next game, he'll probably go 14 and 10 in 20 minutes and then make me go, oh, he's got to be owned in 12-team leagues. Just shuffle him on and off rosters depending on what you need and what other guys are around. He's just not going to be consistently good unless something happens to Adams. The Phoenix Suns and the Boston Celtics. Brandon Knight played 40 minutes, had 16 points with 4 assists, 2 steals, a block, and 2 threes. He hasn't lifted his game with Eric Bledsoe out. Now, I'm still producing nice numbers, but not quite as good as when Bledsoe was actually playing. Jeff Hornacek, I'm sure you're going to be shocked to hear this, but Hornacek changed the starting lineup again. I know. I didn't see it coming. Didn't know he was going to do it. Real massive surprise that he changed the starting lineup. But if I'm being serious, though, what I actually didn't see coming was him putting Markieff Morris back as the starter. I have a theory about why Markieff Morris is back as the starter. I get the feeling that this might be the last time he plays for Phoenix. You're back in, have your last start, and then see you later. There's lots of rumors of him going to the Cavs, to the Rockets, and I get the feeling that this might be the last time he plays for Phoenix. He had 9-9 with 4 assists in 22 minutes with a steal. I own him in a couple of leagues. I just want to see what happens over this next week to see whether he does get traded or not. With him starting, John Lua played 13 minutes, 7-2-2 with a steal and 2 blocks for Lua. Forget about him for standard leagues, but Mirza Teletovic has to be looked at in standard leagues. He only played 21 minutes. He had 22 points in 21 minutes on only 5 of 13 shooting, but he went 8 of 9 from the line. He hit 4 triples. He is now averaging over his last 2 weeks 3.5 triples a game on with 17 points and 4.5 rebounds. He's an awesome free throw shooter as well. The upside is capped because of his coach and because the other guys who are around. But even in limited minutes, he's producing enough value for 12-team league players to own him. And that's interesting enough for me to add him, especially if you need those threes, because he plays 4 games, there's 13 threes that you're going to get from him. It's a pretty big number. Devin Booker started disappointing, 9-5 in 24 minutes, and PJ Tucker went 7-5 with 2 steals and a block. Both of those guys should still be owned. And TJ Warren had 13 points in his 20 minutes. Again, a blowout. Rotations all over the place. Sonny Weems played 24 minutes, for God's sake. 10, 6, and 5 for Weems with Ronnie Price out. And, of course, with no Alex Len, Tyson Chandler only 24 minutes as they went super small. And newsflash on a sec, it's not working. I know nothing he's doing is working, but at least play your best players. Or at least play things that make sense. You know that I'm very big on just play your best players. Chandler went 6-9 in 24 minutes. He's not really a standard league guy for me, I don't think, anyway. On the Celtics, Jay Crowder completely stuffed the stat sheet. 17-6-5, 3 steals, 2 blocks, 2 threes. Been one of the biggest surprises this season to me, what he's been able to do. I reckon he's doubly as good a player as he was last year. I did not rate him at all last season, but he is doubly as good. He's going to be a top 50 player, I reckon, by the end of this season. Isaiah Thomas, 19-2-5. with 3 triples in just 24 minutes. He didn't have to play anymore. This was a blowout game. And he got the extra minutes into Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley still getting his legs underneath him. Now, Bradley was good, 17-7, 3 assists, 2 steals. Also killed your field goals, going 7 of 21, but this is probably his best game since returning from his hip issue. And Amir Johnson went 13-5 in 19 minutes, and Jared Sullinger 11-10 in 24. Johnson, still 12-teamers for me. Sullinger, maybe, and you know where I stand with Olynyk. He's a maybe, and he's going to do your head in for most of the season with the way that he gets used. The Blazers and the Nets, Damian Lillard, 33-3-10 with 5 triples and a steal. Red hot shooting. He's absolutely on fire at the moment. And Ed Davis is putting up some solid numbers too. 14-10 with a steal and a block on 6 of 6 shooting. Now, I don't love Davis as a long-term asset, but in certain team builds, he can be added and he can be used while he's playing this role. Now, it looks like they're just going to continue to go Davis, Leonard, Plumlee, and play them, you know, very similar minutes with Elfrid Aminu playing some at the four and Mo Harkless getting some minutes and Vonleh. Who knows why Vonleh's playing at all, but he is. So the upside for Leonard and Davis and Plumlee at the moment is limited. Now, Leonard was okay, 8-7 with 2 threes, and Plumlee went 7-2-3. But I don't think, you know, none of these guys are must-own. Plumlee, Leonard, Davis, they're not must-own at the moment. Although I can make it, you know, I could say that Plumlee should be owned in most spots, and Davis probably at the moment should be too. But it probably isn't going to last. Elfrid Aminu is starting to kick it into top gear at the moment. 4 blocks in each of the last 2 games. A steal in each of those as well. He hit 2 triples here. This is why we thought he would be a top 100 player this season, because he gives you great blocks, good rebounder, hits threes, can get steals. Not going to be a scorer, but that's what we thought he could do. And he'd been really disappointing up until now. The defensive numbers hadn't been there, but this is great. 8 blocks in 2 games. Obviously, you're holding on to him and seeing what comes of that. CJ McCollum, only the 13 points here on 6 of 15 shooting. His field goal percentage is trending in the wrong direction. He did add 4 rebounds, 7 assists, and 2 steals, though. But his hot streak and his hot start to the season is cooling off a little bit. Still putting up some great numbers. But he's, especially in DFS, he's way too overpriced in DFS for me. Priced at over 8,000. And over the last 2 weeks, he's ranked 211th. Because he's taking so many shots and he's hurting you from the field. He's hurting you from the free throw line. And he's just not doing, you know, quite enough. But his numbers have dropped. He's still a top 40 player on the year. But this is a bit of a downward trend for CJ at the moment. Not much else from the Blazers, I don't think. On to the Nets. Donald Sloan, 15-9-9. Almost a triple-double for Sloan with 2 threes. He played 32 minutes while Shane Larkin played 16, which is odd to me because Larkin had outplayed him the last 2 games, and I still maintain that Larkin's the better player, but obviously Sloan needs to be added now if they're going to run him 30 minutes. He's not going to triple-double every game. No one's going to do that, and he's not this guy. But it's the minutes that's interesting. Now, I think it probably goes back more to an even split in the next game. But, yeah, adding him now makes sense. Seeing what plays out over the next week is the appropriate action. I own Larkin still in leagues. I've got Sloan in one. And I'm just holding to see exactly what plays out. Because there's every chance that Larkin plays 27 minutes in the next game and Sloan plays 22. And it's going to be that case for most of the season as they chop and change between these guys. But if you had Sloan, you'd be pretty happy with that sort of output. Thad Young went 11-8 with a couple of steals, a nice night there, and Brooke Lopez 25-7 with a block in just 28 minutes. The game was a bit of a blowout, so Lopez, nothing was wrong with him, no injuries or anything like that to report. But, you know, still, he would have preferred him to get some more minutes there, but you know, he just wasn't playing. And the Blazers were able to go a little bit smaller as well and a bit more mobile. Joe Johnson 15-3-4 with 3 triples. Again, his value is definitely up. Since Jack's out, he should be owned in majority of 12-team leagues. Thomas Robinson had a decent night, 11-10, but he's a deep league guy only. And Wayne Ellington got every opportunity to shine. He played 35 minutes, but 10-5 with 2 threes doesn't cut it for me, despite the big minutes. I'm not adding him in a standard league. Bojan Bogdanovic has dropped off the face of the earth, 3 points in 16 minutes for him, while Larkin had 2 points, 1 steal, and 2 blocks in his 16 minutes. I am still holding Shane Larkin, because it was only one game ago that Larkin went 15-5 or whatever he went in that game. We went, oh, that's a nice game from Shane Larkin. And then Sloan's come out and done this. It's going to be back and forth, I think, for a while. So I'm just holding and seeing what happens. But if I had the opportunity to switch Larkin for Sloan, I probably would. But I'm not just dropping Larkin. Yeah, I'm not a spite dropper. Oh, Larkin, you're shit. You're dropped. He doesn't give a shit. It's only have to be for a move that makes sense. And I added Larkin in spots where I needed assists and steals, and that still holds true. And there's no one else out there who's going to fit that need, or the perceived value that Larkin could give me. I'll hold on to him. The next game is the Hawks and the Bucks. It was an overtime game. Paul Millsap all over the box score. 23 and 10, 6 assists, 2 steals, 4 blocks, 1 3. This guy's the most underrated player in the NBA, I reckon. When me and Mika did our podcast today, I had him as an all-star starter. That is not fan votes. That is on common sense, and that's how I looked at it. He has been that good this season, and he is so underrated. Kyle Korver, who I touched on earlier, played 41 minutes, 17, 4, and 3. He had a steal and a block, had 3 threes, and had 7 of 10 shooting. This is the Kyle Korver that was, you know, a top 50 sort of player last season. He's nowhere near that now. Again, one game as opposed to a month of crapness doesn't mean that it's switched around. I'd like to see a couple more of these before I think, yeah, Korver's back. But, you know, he still has some back-end last player on your roster 12-team value, even in the way he'd been sucking earlier on, just for his ability to get threes. But I still don't think that this necessarily makes him a must-own guy, and I'm not dropping someone with great upside or great production to make sure that, you know, I grab him because he's going to be back to these top 50 numbers. I don't think that's the case at all. Jeff Teague, after a couple of weeks of poor production, played 37 minutes, only had 9 points, but the 37 minutes is key here. A 3, 4 rebounds, 10 assists, and a steal. And Dennis Schroeder was still productive in his 19, 16 and 5 with 2 threes. Schroeder is more of a stash in a 12-team league than anything, and you know, I'm not a massive fan of stashes, as much as I've got my own little mustache here. That was a terrible joke. I should erase that out before it gets released as a podcast. Schroeder has value, but he's not a must-own for me in a 12-team league. Thabo Sefolosha outplayed Kent Bazemore here. 34 minutes for Sefolosha, 4, 6, and 4 with 2 blocks. So that's a really nice line, but I'm not adding him. And Bazemore, just the 23 minutes, 7 points and 3 assists. And I want to look at that from Kent Bazemore. That's the Kent Bazemore I know and love, not this ridiculous version we've seen this season. So I look at that, and I'm not surprised. But it's not what he's been this season. And hopefully it reverts back to what he was doing earlier on. On the Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo played 50 minutes, had 28 and 16 with a 3. He had 3 blocks and a steal as well. Big night from Giannis. He's on a serious hot streak at the moment. And Michael Carter-Williams bounced back as well. 15, 9 and 7, 2 threes, 3 steals and 2 blocks. That is a very Carter-Williams line. So is the 5 of 15 shooting. If you drafted him, you knew it. You know this was a problem, and you know that it's going to happen. What you do is you relish in the 15, 9, 7, 3, and 2, and the 2 triples, which is not something he's really done this year. You know what he is, and he remains that. Chris Middleton continues to be one of the underrated players in the NBA also. 26 and 4, 3 assists, 3 steals, just really giving this team tremendous value. And for that contract he signed, he's exceeding the value from that. Really, really big numbers from Chris Middleton so far this season, and you know, giving great fantasy value too. Jabari Parker played 37 minutes, which is great to see. 10 and 10 with a steal on a block. Not a good shooting night from Jabari, but he's a 12-team league guy now. And John Henson played 31 minutes. Actually played in preference to Greg Monroe down the stretch. Had a better plus-minus than him. 10 and 7 for Henson with 6 blocks, while Monroe went 15 and 12 in his 27 minutes. Monroe brutalized your percentages too. He went 4 of 16 from the field, and 7 of 12 from the line. What do you do with Henson? I don't think that this sort of play or this sort of minutes is going to be consistent. Yes, he can really help you in blocks, and that's great if that's what he's going to give you, but he's going to probably hurt you in every other category, and he's also not going to play 30 minutes most nights. He's going to be 18, 20 minutes, and he might get 2 or 3 blocks in that situation. He might be a top 10 blocks guy for the year, but he's not going to provide you enough in other areas to make him a must-own player. If for some reason he found himself with a 30-minute role, then yeah, of course, everyone on the John Henson train. But that's just so unlikely to happen. I can't see getting behind him as a must-own. Let's go and pick him up. Maybe if you're desperate for blocks, you do it and see how it goes over 2 or 3 games. But the overall harm you're going to cop in the other category, it might be too much to withstand. The Charlotte Hornets and the New Orleans Pelicans. Kemba Walker, 25, 4, and 4. Nick Batum, 25, 4, and 8. 7 threes between them. Over 50% shooting. These two guys have been absolutely fantastic this year. Marvin Williams played 27 minutes, 10, 3, and 4. He's dropped off to be more like the Marvin Williams that we know and love, and that is we don't love him much at all. He's not a 12-team league guy to me anymore. He can be, but yeah, he's not a must-own. And Cody Zeller had a pretty disappointing night. Just 23 minutes for him, 5 and 8, but I am sticking strong with Zeller. With Jeremy Lamb out, PJ Hairston got a bigger role, 27 minutes, only gave him 7 points though, so that's not all that exciting. And Jeremy Lin had 7 and 5 in 30 minutes, but the biggest number there is the 30 minutes, and he's going to continue to play that sort of expanded role, I think, for a good chunk of this season, and he has 12-team league value. Frank Kaminsky, 25 minutes, 18 and 6 with 2 threes and 7 of 9 shooting. Now, the 7 of 9 shooting is not realistic, but the 25 minutes have been consistent over the last month, and he's shooting not a great percentage for the year, but if that starts to come up, his shooting, yeah, he could have, by the end of the year, 12-team league value, or be a guy who makes an impact in fantasy playoffs, because he's playing this consistent role, and he has the occasional good night and then some bad nights, and it's often to do with his poor shooting. He can block shots, he hits threes, he gets rebounds, he scores, and he should be a decent shooter. Just keep an eye on him for the time being. On the Pelicans, Ryan Anderson just needed 29 minutes to drop 32 points, 6 triples and 8 rebounds, and as usual, no assists, steals, or blocks for Rhino. He went 12 of 19 from the field, so a big, big bump in that category. Anthony Davis, 22, 5 and 4 with a steal and 2 blocks, a nice night from him. And Tyreke Evans must be bothered by that knee. He only played 27 minutes, 12, 2 and 7 with a steal and 2 threes. Normally he's a 34, 35 minute a game guy, so in a game that was this close and was decided on the last second alley-oop, Evans only playing 27 minutes means that there's an issue with his knee still. You can't really do anything with selling him or trading away him now because it's the worst time to do it. Also want to touch on something with Anthony Davis. A lot of people are tweeting at me. I've seen a few comments on the forums and the comments in Basketball Monster as well about, should I trade Davis away because I fear he's getting shut down. I think this shutdown phenomenon or mentality is just overblown. How many guys get shut down? And when they do, it's after your fantasy playoffs are over, the last week of the season. How many guys get shut down weeks in advance? Like Mallow did, but he had a legitimate injury. He was old, he had this knee injury. I blasted him for it last season for what he did with the injury, but he had a legitimate injury that he suffered at the start of the season. Yet Davis doesn't have a legitimate injury. He has little nicks here, but the guy's, what, 22? He's the star of their team. They're not just going to go, you know what, Davo, just sit out, mate. You're not playing the last month. I just don't feel it's going to happen. Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe last season, lots of guys got shut down and didn't realize it. I don't remember who got shut down enough to really impact fantasy leagues. Yes, the last week of the season, guys don't play. That's why you don't play fantasy leagues the last game of the season. Yeah, I don't even, the last 2 weeks of the season, I don't like running playoffs into those. Players will play. Yeah, most of the time, they'll sit a couple of games down the end. And please, let me know if I'm missing someone. I could be missing someone completely. But guys who missed, Chris Bosh didn't get shut down. He had a blood clot in his lungs. That's not getting shut down. Injuries happen. I just don't think, is there any example of a guy just going, we're not playing for 3 weeks because no reason? I don't think there is. Again, please let me know if I've missed something, but I just don't recall anything like that happening. So the moral of the story is, if someone offers me Anthony Davis for 2 of my players that don't equal anywhere close to his value because they're scared of him getting shut down, I'm taking it. Thanks, I'll have him. I know you're worried about a shutdown, but good, it's not happening. I'll take him. Let me know if I'm wrong. Drew Holiday, 27 minutes, 13, 6, and 10 for Drew. Big night there. Just disappointing he couldn't get to the 30-minute mark, though. Alonzo G, he got closer to 30, which is obviously great coaching. 8 and 9 for G with 2 steals and a block. And Dante Cunningham, in his 24 minutes, went 5, 2, and 2 with 2 blocks as well. And neither of those guys should be anywhere near your fantasy roster. Nor should Norris Cole, who had 2 points in his 16 minutes and continues to be really bad. Eric Gordon, after a big game, he struggled 10 points with 2 triples on 4 of 12 shooting, but he is still someone that you hold on to. The Dallas Mavericks and the Chicago Bulls, Darren Williams, all the Mavs starters were back. Darren Williams, 18, 3, and 6, 4 triples and 2 blocks. Dirk went 21 and 7 with a couple of threes. Zaza went 9, 10, and 4 in his 34 minutes. Wes Matthews went 8 and 6 in 37. And Chandler Parsons, probably the only one who really struggled, went 8-3-4 in his 33 minutes. It pushed all those guys who played big roles for the Mavericks in the last game back to the bench. JJ Morad, JaVale McGee, Dwight Powell, Charlie Villanueva, all these guys back in a reserve role now, and there's really not much we can take away from what the Mavericks did in this game. They beat the Bulls, but that's not saying much. Pau Gasol back after missing a game, 17-8-4 with a steal and two blocks, and Derrick Rose, also who missed the game against the Sixers, went 18-4 with two assists and two steals, and that's great when you see two steals coming from Derrick Rose. Still not, obviously, back at his best, and he never will be, but that these are numbers enough where he can be owned in fantasy leagues now. Taj Gibson played 30 minutes, 9-11. What about Jimmy Butler? He had 53 points against the Sixers. How did he go? He had four. Yeah, four. Not 40, not 44, not 54. 4 points. I'd need to look this up. I probably should have done it before the show. I wonder if there's any sort of record of a guy scoring 50 points and then failing to score five in the next game. I don't imagine it's happened very often. Maybe Mo Williams did it last year when he went for 50, or Corey Brewer. But that's a big drop off for an all-star guard. 4, 5, and 6 for Butler. So still had the 6 assists, still had 2 steals, but definitely not a good night to use him in DFS. And I'm sure plenty of people did. Tony Snell, who started, I've railed on him enough. 3 and 5 with a triple. He's just no good. And Dougie McDermott missed all 4 of his shots for 0 points in his 21 minutes. This was not a good game from the Bulls. The Miami Heat and the Denver Nuggets. Chris Bosh at it again, 24-3-3 with a 3 and a block. And with Dwayne Wade pulling out last minute, we saw Gerald Green get the start. He did nothing and played less minutes than what he'd been doing previously. 24 minutes for Green, 2-3-2, so a real letdown for him. Tyler Johnson was solid yet again, 15-4-4 with a steal, and he has short-term add value with Wade out and Dragic out. Dragic is more the long-term thing. Beno Udrih was the guy who really blew up in their absence. 37 minutes for Udrih, 11-3-11. With a 3 and a steal, he would have been a pretty decent guy to have on some DFS teams. He was on my one, I know that, and he put up some pretty decent numbers for his low salary. Justice Winslow played 23 minutes and had 8 points with a couple of triples. That's a start for him to get a couple of threes, but he's still not a fantasy relevant player. And Luol Deng went 12-5-2 in 39 minutes, and I feel like that could just be, I reckon that's almost his average. I'll have to have a look. I don't know his average off the top of my head, but 12-5-2 sounds like a Luol Deng average stat line. 10, 4.5, and 1.5. Yeah, not far off. On the Nuggets, they started Darrell Arthur. Yep. Darrell Arthur over Nikola Jokic. Now, Mike Malone's a pretty good coach, but he makes some weird decisions. A front court of Darrell Arthur and Kenneth Faried does not work for me. Arthur's been great this season. Looked really, really good when he's played decent minutes. He played 30 here and went 18-8 with 2 steals. He's worth a speculative pickup if you've got some rubbish that you want to get rid of, because if he sticks in a 30-minute role, he's going to be productive. But it was odd to me in a game where Nurkic was out that they would bench Jokic as well. And they're adamant on Jokic only being a center, which is wrong in my opinion. He's a power forward as well. He can stretch the floor, he can pass. He should be playing the four. Him and Nurkic should play together. But hey, at least they lost. And they had a big lead and they blew it. Good. Jokic went 9-6-5 in 18 minutes with a block. I'm still holding him if I own him, because that's still really productive, and I think that he should be getting 22 to 23 minutes. Yes, I know he's a rookie, but he should play more than this. Kenneth Faried went 14-5 with a couple of blocks, and Emmanuel Mudiay off the bench in 26 minutes had 16 points, 4 assists, and 2 threes, and probably one of his best games. He hit all 4 of his free throws. He went 5 of 11 from the field. All those things are not commonplace for Emmanuel Mudiay. He's always going to hurt your percentages. Didn't today, but he's going to hurt them in general. He's worth a stash if you're looking for the counting stats that he can bring. Jameer Nelson in the start went 7-3-4 with a triple one. Nelson's definitely worth owning for now, but as soon as that switch is made, there's no point in holding on. And what about my boyfriend Will Barton? My ex-boyfriend, my whatever, whatever he is. I don't like him. 27 minutes for Barton, 9-8 with a 3 and 3 assists and a block. The sheen has come so far off Will Barton lately, it's not even funny, and I don't know what it is. I can't explain why he was good. I also can't explain why all of a sudden he's back to being not good. I don't know what happened. Did the HGH wear off? Allegedly? I don't know what happened. As someone who watches more Nuggets games than me, what's happened to Will Barton? I should check in with my Nuggets guys and see what they have to say. But he has just been and putrid. Now, Danilo Gallinari was pretty putrid in this one. He went 2 of 10, still had 11, 4, and 2. He's been a revelation for them this season. And Gary Harris, I still like Harris. Now, his shot was not good, 4 of 14. He had 11 points and 2 assists, but 38 minutes. He continues to get big minutes, and at some point it's going to all come together, and he is going to be a top 100 player for a stretch this season. I'm pretty confident of that. The last game of the night was, hopefully if you're in the East Coast, you went to bed early and didn't watch this because it was bad. It was so painful to watch. LeBron went 19-7-7 with 2 blocks in 36 minutes. The Cavs made a switcheroo at starting center, put Timofey Mozgov back in. But it didn't really change too much because Mozgov played just 18 minutes and Tristan Thompson played 22. I get the feeling that it was a matchup-based thing and Mozgov's bigger and he can play Dwight Howard. Cool. Didn't really mean anything because Mozgov didn't play enough. And that's why I never understand. Look, maybe this wasn't the case, and that's not why David Blatt did it. But when they go, oh, we made it for matchup purposes, and then play him 17 minutes, what about the other 17 minutes that Dwight Howard plays? Do you not care about matchups in that time frame? Does that not make a difference? The only time that a matchup is important is when the game tips off, yeah? Oh, we put him in for matchups. Cool. Why'd you play him 10 minutes then? Because we're at the other 38 minutes of the game. Do matchups not count then? Oh, so frustrating, some of these things. But anyway, Mozgov played the same minutes he would off the bench. Thompson did get hit with his minutes. The Cavs went a little bit smaller, playing Love at center some. Thompson 10-5 in 22 minutes. And if you did own him for his rebounding, just hold. I think it might have been a matchup thing. I think he probably goes back to 28, 29 minutes in the next game, Thompson. Love had 11-13 with 3 steals and 3 threes, and Kyrie went 23-4 in his 30 minutes. J.R. Smith only played the 26 here. They spread the minutes to Iman Shumpert and Matthew Dellavedova. Still hit 2 triples and had 13-5 and still is a must-own player. On the Rockets, James Harden, 11-5-5 with 3 steals and a block. Not his best night, clearly. And Dwight Howard, 14-11 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. Not a terrible night from Dwight. Yeah, pretty solid. Pat Beverley, back in the starting lineup after missing the last game due to personal reasons. 13-3-3 with 3 triples. Yep, he can be owned in some 12-team leagues. It really, really depends what you need, but his upside is definitely capped. Ty Lawson, 6 minutes in his return. Yeah, that's not good. Jason Terry, 18 minutes there. I'm not owning Lawson. Clint Capella, back to starting. Only played 14 minutes. 7-4 with a block. But Terrence Jones didn't really take advantage. He played 22 minutes and went 3-4 with a block. Again, Jones has great fantasy potential, but he's just not a good real-life player, and it's going to find him out, and that's going to be the case. I still own him in a couple of leagues because I'm waiting to see what happens with potential trades and things like that, but not a good night from Jones, not a good night from Capella. This game was over pretty quickly, so once you see KJ McDaniels playing, you know that this game was beyond salvation. 4 minutes for McDaniels, 4-3, while Montrezl Harrell played 9 minutes for 7 points. All right, guys. We are going to take a quick break now. I'm going to satisfy my thirst after ranting probably a little bit too much in that section. And then we'll be back to preview Saturday's action from a DFS point of view. Games that are going to be played on Saturday. No early games, so that's good for a DFS point of view. We know when the games are on. They're all at standard times. They're all going to be included in most of the tournaments. So let's start looking at those games. The first one we look at is the Milwaukee Bucks and the Charlotte Hornets. The Bucks coming off an overtime game. you might think that it's a little bit risky to run guys like Chris Middleton out there again. But in the last time the Bucks played a back-to-back, Middleton played 40 minutes in both of those games. He's playing a stack of minutes at the moment. I think it's 6,900. He pretty much exceeds value in nearly every game that he plays. He's definitely recently, and against a Hornets team who allows small forwards to go for big numbers, I do like using him. I like using Nicholas Batum more, though. He's at 7,100. He exploded for almost 40 points today. You'd have to think that getting close to that is within range against this Bucks team, who, as a general, should be a little bit tired. Cody Zeller was terrible in the last game, but at 5,200 against the Bucks team, who we saw what Paul Millsap can do, and Zeller is clearly not in that same class, but big men can put up big numbers against the Bucks. So Zeller is worth looking at, and 4,100 for Frank Kaminsky is not dumb. He put up 25.7 in today's action. He's averaging 25 across his last three. He's probably more of a punt option, but as I said, the extra bump that the Bucks give you, it comes into play for him as well. Jabari Parker is also not a horrible option at 5,100. He's basically a 28-point guy across his last three or four games, and that is on the cards again against the Hornets here. John Henson, tournament only, he's at 3,600. He almost got close to 30 points. Well, he did get close to 30 points. He got 28.9. You're relying upon him having a big block game, and that's not reliable for cash games. It's maybe a tournament option, and that's probably about it. Jeremy Lin is not achieving value at the moment. 5,400, I'll leave him alone. Giannis Antetokounmpo at 7,400. He is smashing value. Nothing suggests to me that the Hornets are going to be able to slow him down. The only thing that might slow him down is fatigue, but I'm okay with using him. Same with Michael Carter-Williams at 6,700. He's definitely getting sort of back in business at the moment. A 33 average across his last five. Yeah, 40 today. And against the Hornets, it's not a bad guy to go and look at using. Greg Monroe at 7,800. The matchup does not suit him. His form has been decent. Even though he got benched today, he still put up 36 points. And at 7,800, you want him to be guaranteed of getting that. And I'm not really sure that I am. So I reckon I can go in different directions than Greg Monroe. The next game is the Boston Celtics and the Washington Wizards. No spread out for this one. Waiting on the status of Marcin Gortat and Otto Porter. That obviously changes the Wizards quite a bit. Bradley Beal will also not play, most likely with his rest being at a back-to-back game. And we don't know if Chris Humphries is going to be out. So there's lots of guys to pay attention to on the Wizards. Avery Bradley at 4,900 exceeded value today. I think that he's a good chance to do it again against the Wizards team, who's not great at defending shooting guards. I think he's in line for another 30-point performance, and at less than 5,000, that's exciting to me. Otto Porter and Marcin Gortat, the matchups suit them, but I don't like them returning from injury, so I probably won't use them. Kelly Olynyk, Jared Sullinger, they're appealing. 4,300 for Olynyk, 52 for Sullinger. But it's not reliable for a cash game. Look, Olynyk almost put up 40 points today, and Sullinger put up 26. But in the last five, Olynyk's had a game of 11, and Sullinger's had a game of 9. It's not reliable for cash because we don't know what Stevens is going to do with this rotation. On the other hand, Jay Crowder for the Celtics is much more reliable. 6,400 for him, almost 40 today, a 32-point average across his last five. You know you're going to get close to 30 on most nights from Crowder, so he's worth a look. Also, don't discount Garrett Temple from the Wizards. With Beal out, he's probably going to get 32 minutes. He's got a 26 average across his last three. He's been putting up some nice numbers. He's worth a look. And Jared Dudley at 4,300 is a GPP option. The Celtics are bad against front court guys in general. We saw Mirza Teletovic go off today against them. You know, even Markieff Morris in limited minutes put up nice numbers. If Dudley is forced into 30 minutes with Humphries out again, he could comfortably go for 25 points. And that's really enough value there. The problem is that he has a bit of downside, so it's hard to rely upon him in cash. 4,700 for Marcus Smart. I don't think he's going to drop a 45-point triple-double again. That seems pretty unlikely. So I'll restrict him to maybe a tournament lineup, but he's definitely not a high-priority use guy. And 8,600 for Isaiah Thomas. Not for me against John Wall. That's just too expensive. He needs to go for 40-plus to get anywhere near that, and I just don't think that he's going to do that. Or I'm not confident enough that he's going to do that. John Wall at 9,800. The same thing for him. Against the Celtics, no thanks. That's a big price, and it's a bad matchup. I don't want to invest in him. And 5,500 for Amir Johnson, I have some interest in it, but not enough to really use it. And again, the Wizards are a pretty tough matchup for opposition centers, so I think we'll leave him alone as well. Ramon Sessions at 4,400. Normally he's been a consistent guy, but again, the Celtics, Avery Bradley on him, not a good look. The Brooklyn Nets and the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks are favored by 11. The total is 204 in this one. No injury news to really talk about here. Kyle Korver at 3,800 against the Nets becomes a very nice tournament play again. Can he replicate what he did against the Bucks? Maybe not, but at 3,800, if he gives you 24 points, done, deal. Great, great value. I think he's an awesome option. Wayne Ellington at 35, the minutes have been there, the production has not. You can leave him alone except for a weird tournament lineup. But I do like Donald Sloan at 3,700. Yes, I don't think he's going to be a triple-double threat, but if he's going to play even 28 minutes at 3,700, he's worth a look. And against the Hawks, who do allow the point guards to put up some nice numbers. Now, Jeff Teague and Dennis Schroeder, great matchups against the Nets here. But what's Budenholzer going to do with the minutes? It's a tough one to work out. I would restrict both of those guys to tournaments. 5,800 for Teague, 49 for Schroeder. So they're not overly cheap. So it's hard to use them. Paul Millsap, on the other hand, is a good one. At 8,400, he's got 50-point upside. He had 54 against the Bucks today. And there's definite, you know, you feel confident that he's going to get 40 points. And that's a pretty nice cash game option. 86 for Brook Lopez. Feels a little bit expensive. Yes, the Hawks allow some pretty big numbers, but I'm not all that excited about using him at that sort of salary. I'd much prefer to use Al Horford at 7,800, who's averaging almost 33 across his last three games and had a pretty big game mixed in there as well, and he's only at 7,800. Thad Young at 69 is okay, but probably not for me. And Joe Johnson is just priced too high at 5,200. I don't think we really want to use him. Kent Bazemore, not happening for him at the moment. He's at 5,700. That's too expensive for a guy who's averaging just 16.7 in those last three games. The Portland Trailblazers and the Philadelphia 76ers is the next game up. The Blazers are favored by 5.5. The total is 208 points. Nick Stauskas and Jeremy Grant are both considered doubtful. Stauskas is dealing with a shoulder issue and Grant is dealing with a calf, so they will likely both not play. Bob Cove, 4,600. Robert Covington put up almost 38 in his last game. He had been trending up. This is more of a tournament speculation sort of play, but at 4,600, we know the sort of upside that Covington's got. And with Stauskas and Grant both out, someone is going to have to play on the wing, and it's going to have to be him. Hollis Thompson's a minimum salary guy. He'll have to play some minutes, but he's in the Justice Winslow category of doing the least with the most. He's averaging 30 minutes across his last three games, and he's averaging 12 fantasy points. That's not good enough. 41 for Ed Davis, a great matchup for him. He's averaging 24 across his last three games, and at 4,100, that's enough. Plus, he gets a Sixers bump here. I'm okay with actually using him here. I don't mind using Jahlil Okafor as well for the Sixers. At 6,300, the Blazers are not a great front court. He is a 30-point guy across the last three. I think that he could be in for another 30 here. And Nerlens Noel is also worth looking at. He's at 6,200, and he could go for 30 points. If I'm picking one of those two guys, yes, they're different positions, but I would probably take Okafor. Ish Smith is now up to 6,900. That's getting pretty high. He is averaging 42, though, across the last three, which is exceeding value at that price. So I'm still relatively comfortable, especially going up against Lillard and McCollum. Although Portland's ease for point guards is actually a negative. So they're actually, you know, better than average defending point guards, which doesn't make sense when you watch Lillard. But from the fantasy points they allow as opposed to average, it's less, which is weird. Mason Plumlee would be great if we knew what minutes he was going to get. We don't, so we can not use him, or we can avoid using him. Al-Farouq Aminu had 4 blocks today and put up 21.6 fantasy points. So as great as 4 blocks is, and as great as it is going against the Sixers, at 5,300, I'm a little bit hesitant to use him, even though it's not a big salary. He just doesn't produce the numbers for a daily fantasy point of view. Dame Lillard at 9,200. 52 average across his last five. His lowest score in his last five is 45. Deploy with a lot of confidence. The Blazers aren't good enough to smash the Sixers, so he has to sit. I still think he plays close to his full complement of minutes. 8,200 for TJ McCollum is too expensive. Yes, he gets a bit of a Sixers bump, but no, not at that salary. That's just too high for me to use. I would consider Alan Crabb. He put up 33 in today's game. He's averaging 25 across the last three. At 4,600, there's a little bit of upside for him. He can go for 30, And you would think going up against the Sixers, it would be a great opportunity for him to do that, but not putting too much faith in him. The Golden State Warriors and the Detroit Pistons is up next. The Warriors are favored by 7.5. Got a big total of 214 in this one. No injuries to be concerned about, so that's good. 7,100 for Reggie Jackson. Got benched in the last game. His ownership percentage is going to be pretty low, but I actually don't mind using him in this one. I think this is not a bad spot to use Reggie Jackson and hope for a bounce back. I also like Andre Drummond, who's now priced under 9,000 at 8,700. The matchup is positive for him. He's only averaging 35, but I think this is a chance for him to go for over 40. Marcus Morris is cheap, but he's also really bad. He's at 4,800, but his average over his last five is less than 17 points. He just isn't getting it done, and he's consistently not getting it done. I'd rather spend 900 less and use Stanley Johnson, who has actually put up bigger numbers than Morris over the last 5 weeks. Steph Curry at 10,700. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope did a pretty good job on him last time. 10,700 is not a salary I really want to use for him in this matchup, so I reckon we leave Steph alone. You could consider Harrison Barnes, who's put up 28 in the last game, but again, Marcus Morris and Caldwell-Pope have been defending pretty well at that spot, so I'm not sure that Barnes is a guy we want to look at. And Ersan Ilyasova at 54, he's worth a tournament punt, I think. A 28 average across the last three, a favorable matchup, 33 in his last game. I think he's definitely worth a look. Draymond Green at 9,600, and Draymond's heading back to Detroit, heading home. Does something play into that? Probably. But the Pistons for power forwards is a real tough matchup. He's averaging less than 40 over his last five, and at 9,600, he needs to do a lot more than that. I will be fading Draymond Green. Klay Thompson's worth looking at maybe. He's been really bad. I'd throw it in a tournament because his ownership should be low going up against KCP. But at 7,100, it probably makes me steer a little bit clear, even though it's a pretty nice sort of contrarian play. The Knicks and the Grizzlies is the next game. We're unlikely to see Mike Conley for the Knicks. He's still dealing with that Achilles problem. And Kristaps Porzingis for the Knicks is probable.
Porzingis.
Yep. So, Mario Chalmers. He'll likely play 40 minutes. He'll likely start at 5,600. He's averaging 35 across his last five games. He's almost a no-brainer to put into a lineup. Yeah, he could have a stinker, but his worst game across those last five is still 21 points. So it's not a complete abortion of a game. When you're only at 5,600, 21 points is not a bad line. 4,500 for Tony Allen. He had a bit of a down game in the last one, but it has been relatively consistent. Don't mind using him, but also don't love it. Mark Gasol at 7,500. He's been really good lately as well. I can understand using him. He's a solid guy, not much upside, but pretty decent floor, I think. And Porzingis at 7,800. If there's no Mallow, I'd love getting on Porzingis here. He's averaging 37.8 across his last three. Even if Mallow plays, I think this is a nice spot to use him. Mallow at 8,700. I don't want to use a guy who's questionable with an ankle injury. Robin Lopez at 4,700 is a really nice cheap center play. The Marc Gasol matchup's not ideal, but at 4,700, he can just put up 25 points, and that'd be plenty for him. Zach Randolph, Matt Barnes, Jeff Green, maybe throw them into a tournament. If I like any of them, I like Barnes, but I don't love many of them at all. And Courtney Lee at 4,000. 4,000 feels too high for him, given he's averaged 11 points over his last three games. Aaron Aflalo remains a tournament-only option, and this is a horrible matchup for him, as it is for Jose Calderon and Jerian Grant, so I don't think we want to use any of them. Now, if Mallow's out, Lance Thomas and Derek Williams are the two guys we look at. Williams put up 40 in the last game. He's at 4,500. He's worth a look. And Thomas, who didn't do a huge amount, but at 3,600, he's a tournament option. And I think Williams is probably only a tournament option as well. The Lakers and the Jazz. The Jazz are favored by 7.5 here. The total is a paltry 190.5. Julius Randle is probable with his foot, and Brandon Bass is questionable with his ankle issue. For the Jazz, Trevor Booker and Derek Favors have already been ruled out. Kobe is considered questionable with an Achilles. This is not the last time that Kobe plays in Utah, so there is a big chance that he rests in this one. With Booker out and with Favors out, Trey Lyles is going to have to play big minutes. 3,900 for Lyles. He put up 28.6 in a similar situation in the last game. I'm all for using Trey Lyles. And it's not like Larry Nance and Julius Randle, the guys are going to shut him down. They're going to have to run Lyles big minutes. And at 3,900, can he give you 25 points? I reckon he's comfortably got that in. He's averaging 21.8 as it is over the last five. I like Lyles here. I like Rod Hood as well at 5,100. And I also like Rod Hood because I like saying his name is Rod Hood. Don't know why. I always get an odd image in my head of just a rod with a jacket on with a little hood put over the top. It's a pretty weird image, but that's why I like calling him Rod Hood, because he's a Rod Hood. Anyway, that's enough of me babbling about that. 5,100 for Rod. 23-point average across the last three. Not really quite there, but the Lakers bump is fantastic for him. He's not having competition for minutes. Very minimal competition for shots. This is a good spot for him. And Harold Neto at 3,600 is also worth looking at. Now, I haven't said that often at all. He put up 20 in the last game in 20 minutes. But at 3,600 against the Lakers, you'd have to consider it, because if he gets 20 again, that's 5x value. Rudy Gobert at 6,500. We've been waiting for him to break out. It hasn't happened. This could be it. This could be the game where he has 6 or 7 blocks and grabs 15 boards. It's the Lakers. Let's hope that Gobert has a big one here. And Gordon Hayward at 7,600, just really consistent. 37 points almost every night. Again, the Lakers, worth using him. Trey Burke at 45. Nope. Lou Williams at 6,000. That price has crept up. He's still usable, I think. Given he's averaging 35 across the last five, at 6,000, he's still usable. But it's coming a little bit too high now for me. Jordan Clarkson at 62, in comparison, I'd rather use Lou Williams at 6,000 than Clarkson at 62, but I'd probably end up fading both. Julius Randle, 27 points in his last game at 5,500. Not a good matchup here. Same goes for Larry Nance, who's averaging 26 across his last three at 4,500, but it's not an optimal lineup, or not an optimal matchup going up against the Jazz. One game left, that is the Sacramento Kings and the Los Angeles Clippers. There is no spread for this one because we don't know the status of Duye Dukan. No, I'm joking. We don't know the status of DeAndre Jordan, who's battling with pneumonia. He reckons he will play. If he doesn't play, then Cole Aldrich gets the nod, and he put up 32 in the last game. He is someone you'd want to have in a lineup, especially against the Kings. So he's a guy to look at if DeAndre doesn't play. 4,100 for Jamal Crawford is not a bad cash game play. He's a 22 average across the last three. He can easily give you 5x value with that salary. And 5,000 for JJ Redick, I think, is also a pretty solid play. Willie Cauley-Stein, I've been not a big supporter of him, but he's at 3,600, and he'll likely start and play 24 or 25 minutes, and you can get you 23 points. He put up 22.5 in the last game in 24 minutes as a starter. Easily can do that here. Boogie Cousins has been dominating. 10,800 is a big salary, but if I'm spending 10,800, I could spend 10,700 on Steph. I would rather spend it on Boogie because he's been producing the numbers at a higher rate than what Steph has been doing. Almost 58 in the last game. 54 is his average across the last five. His lowest score in his last five is 46. So tremendous floor. I think he's a great cash play. I think he's a great GPP play. I also like Chris Paul here, who's got a five-game range between 42 and 53.5. He's at 9,700. And again, if you're picking a 10,000 point guard, I'm taking him over John Wall and over a guy like Steph Curry as well. DeAndre Jordan at 8,100. It feels a little bit high for a guy battling pneumonia. I think we'll probably leave him out of it. Rajon Rondo at 8,100. Nah, it's too expensive when you're going up against Chris Paul. And 73 for Rudy Gay. I don't mind using Rudy Gay there. It's probably just a cash game play. Just a solid 30-point sort of player, but not loving it in a tournament. I don't think his upside's really there. Omri Caspi's dropped right off. We can leave him alone. Same as Ben McLemore and Marco Bellinelli. And if you expect Pablo Prigioni to get himself another 8 steals, I reckon you're going to be pretty disappointed. Let's have a look at the DFS value plays for Saturday. At point guard, Don Sloan, 3,700. Mario Chalmers, 5,600. And Chris Paul at 9,700. For the shooting guards, Avery Bradley at 49. Rod Hood at 51. And there is not one high-priced shooting guard that I have any sort of interest in on Saturday. At small forward, Bob Cove at 4,600. Chris Middleton at 6,900. And Gordo Hayward at 76. Power forwards, Trey Lyles, 39. Cody Zeller at 52 and Paulie Millsap at 8,400. And at centers, Willie Cauley-Stein, 36, Jahlil Okafor at 63, and Boogie at 10,800. We are done here, guys. If you could support the podcast by leaving a review on iTunes, it would be much appreciated. Just 2 minutes is all it takes. I really appreciate everyone giving me their feedback. It actually makes me feel pretty good to read the stuff that you guys write, and it helps the show a lot. So that's, if you're ever wondering how you can support the podcast, that's one of the best ways to do it. tell your mates, share it on social media as well. Also subscribe on YouTube. Give Basketball Monster on Twitter a follow at BaskMonster and myself at RedRock_Bball. The website is basketballmonster.com. There is also hardwoodparoxysm.com, which you can check out for lots of intelligent writings on the NBA and lots of fun stuff as well. All right, guys, we are done. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.